You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Piper Corp, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast from the Ecological Society of America, in which I interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. David Inouye of the University of Maryland, whose research in wildflower phenology and climate change was recently highlighted by Sean Hannity. Dr. Inouye, so just as a little background, Senators Coburn and McCain recently released a stimulus checkup report that highlights what they considered to be the 100 most wasteful instances of spending in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act last year. Puppet shows, bar renovations, things that some people say will boost the economy, but that Coburn and McCain see as frivolous. But also, a number of scientific studies showed up on the list. And your grant from the National Science Foundation, or NSF, ranked as number 35. So can you just talk a little bit about what your project was about?
So this is a grant that was funded through the NSF program that's called Long-Term Research in Environmental Biology. And the goal of that program is to support individual-based research projects that have to have a minimum of 6 years of data before they're eligible to apply to the program. So my proposal built upon a project that I started as a graduate student at the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory in Colorado, up at about 9,500 feet. In 1973. The project that I started in collaboration with a few other people out at the lab was to set out 2x2 meter plots scattered around different habitats, and we would count the numbers of flowers of any species that occurred in those plots every other day for the growing season. And although that one-year project gave us a lot of interesting information, like what's the diversity and abundance of flowering at that scale and how many species overlap in flowering throughout the season, it turned out that it would be interesting to then see how much variation there is between years. So actually, I've just kept it going almost every year since 1973. So this is now a long-term record of the abundance and the phenology of flowering at this high-altitude site from 30 2x2 meter plots.
So it seems like one of the major issues here is a lack of appreciation for long-term research and the scale at which meaningful ecological observation often takes place. Is this something that's difficult to communicate to the public?
Well, I do have to make the point to audiences, which include both scientific and non-scientific audiences, that this project is, by its very nature, long-term because you only get one data point a year.
Right,
and so it really does take a long-term perspective in order to see how does the first date of flowering or the peak date of flowering for a particular species change from year to year. I think it probably takes about somewhere between 7 and 10 years before you can say with some confidence, is there any kind of a trend going on in one direction or another, because you only get that one data point a year.
So one of the things that stood out to me was a quote from the Denver Post, presumably to stress how unnecessary the research is. Evidently, a reporter visited the site in the spring and said from, quote, "The bounty of wildflowers filling the meadows and blooming in the crannies of Colorado's high country, you'd never guess that some of them are in trouble." Now, what that quote highlights to me is the very different ways that scientists and the public understand the value of basic research. So what do you see as the value, and how do we justify that when we are in such an economic slump?
Well, I think there are a couple of points to make from that very brief quotation that the Coburn and McCain report had. It turned out that last summer was actually a pretty good year for the wildflowers. We had enough snow the previous winter that the flowers managed in large part to escape damage from frost, which is something that's been increasing in frequency, frost damage to the wildflowers over the last decade or so. So A, last year was a little bit unusual. And B, despite the fact that there are some, quite a few species that are frost sensitive, there are some that are not. So that even in a year with frost damage, when there may be no aspen sunflowers and very few fleabane daisies and very few lupin flowers compared to a year without frost, somebody who doesn't know the flowers and doesn't look at them year after year wouldn't recognize the fact that, oh, there's a whole component of a flora that's not in bloom this year. And that's the danger of A, 1 year perspective, and B, not knowing very much about how the meadows change from year to year. So I think that's one point that you would miss in an article that takes a short-term perspective. And the value of the work that I'm doing that's funded for this long-term study is that it does give us that overall perspective, that long-term perspective, so that we can recognize when particular species or when particular components of the flora are either absent or not doing well. And that has to be coupled with, in some cases, demographic studies. So I also have thousands of individual plants that are tagged and go back year after year to see how those individual plants are doing in terms of their flowering and in terms of their survivorship.
So when you communicate then to society or to the public about what the role of this research is, how do you make that tangible to people to understand how this translates into something that is worth their tax money when things are as they are?
Yeah. Well, some people are just intrinsically interested in something like wildflowers and are very interested to learn about their population biology, their phenology, and how they're responding to climate change. But I can point to economic reasons why it's useful to have this kind of information. The town of Crested Butte, which is by the Rocky Mountain Biological Laboratory, has an annual wildflower festival, a week-long festival celebrating the diversity and abundance of wildflowers in that area. And they're somewhat concerned, and perhaps rightfully so, about how climate change is going to affect the display of wildflowers that attracts quite a few tourists to that area. People who are interested in pollinators like hummingbirds or butterflies or bumblebees, I think, also recognize the value of understanding the reliability, the diversity, the abundance of the resources that those pollinators need, and how they may be affected if certain species of flowers start to disappear from lower altitudes because of climate change, or if an increasing frequency of frost leads to a lowered abundance of those floral resources that the pollinators need. There are also some agricultural implications of an increasing frequency of frost. For instance, the nearby valley, the North Fork Valley of the Gunnison, is a very important region for fruit growing. And quite a few years in the recent decade, there have been no apricots and very few cherries produced because of frost damage. And in lower altitudes, there may also be an increase in the frequency of frost damage. For instance, in Florida this year, northern Florida, a late frost in January ended up wiping out about 70% of the tomato crop, which resulted in a 40% increase in the wholesale price of tomatoes that time of year. So in addition to learning about the effects of frost on wildflowers, we're also learning about the effects on pollinators and learning about the effects on some agricultural situations like orchards and even lower altitude agricultural operations where they're growing frost-sensitive crops.
So your research gained some additional attention when Sean Hannity decided to feature it during, I guess it was the Wasteful Spending 102 countdown that aired last month.
Right.
And you were interviewed for the show, which I don't think is something a lot of our members have had experience with. So can you just talk about how that went?
Yes, I guess I wasn't familiar with Sean Hannity. I don't watch Fox News and actually don't get cable TV. But when I mentioned this to the public affairs officer for our College of Chemical and Life Sciences here at the University of Maryland and to some other colleagues around the country, they were all, I guess their advice was, don't bother to participate in this because they're going to take whatever you say and twist it to their advantage and try and use it as a way to denigrate the science and the awards that NSF makes. So I went into this with, I guess, both eyes open, but decided that I would make an effort to pass on some information about my research. So they did interview me in a studio here on campus, but they ended up not using my interview. They did use an interview with the director of the Rocky Mountain Biological Lab and also stopped a couple of citizens on the streets of Crested Butte, Colorado, to ask their opinion about spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to study wildflowers. Yeah, they did make fun of the research, but that was the whole point of the show. It wasn't to try and educate people about what researchers do, what science is, or what this about this particular project. It was really to find a way to poke fun at the use of the stimulus bill funds. This effort by Senators Coburn and McCain follows on the heels of the work that Senator Proxmire used to do with his Golden Fleece Award. What these senators have done is to ask a staffer to review grant awards and pick out topics that they think could be made fun of. And so the idea of spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on wildflowers, I guess, seemed like an easy way to say this money is not being spent wisely.
Right. It seems unfortunate that it's almost just because, you know, something like wildflowers, the word almost, and not even really looking at the science behind it.
Yeah, I think part of the role of people who are lucky enough to get funding from the National Science Foundation is to help educate the public about the importance of that research and to thank them for helping support the National Science Foundation with their tax dollars.
That was Dr. David Inouye from the University of Maryland. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us again next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Gattelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.